All right, we got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. We don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Crank it, let it cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
What's happening? Welcome in. Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. It seems like every time we've got a busy show, every time we've got a ton of stuff we have to talk about in 3 hours, doesn't seem like it's quite going to be enough. The Royals decide to play a day game and once again eat into our valuable airtime. So we're starting the show 20 minutes late. We're going to talk to Bill Self in 10 minutes. That's right. Late Night in the Fog coming up this Saturday. So, of course, we got to talk to the head coach himself. Bill Self joins us at 3:30. Ton of KU football to talk. Ton of Chiefs to talk. Some Big 12 to talk. I guess sports got a little political this weekend. We'll talk about that. KU got a new recruit. We got to talk about this guy. And, of course, the one and only, the incomparable, David Lawrence joins me now in studio because it is a Monday. It is a crimson and blue Monday, and my guy DL is strapped in and ready to go.
I'm ready to go, yes. Nick, it's great to be here, and we have a lot to talk about. I'm looking forward to talking to Bill Self. We had a chance to talk to him at halftime of the game on Saturday, and, you know, of course, a lot about the game on Saturday. We've got a couple of weeks to digest the game on Saturday to West Virginia when it looked like Kansas was down and out. And then a third quarter that certainly, if you weren't excited, if you were one of those people that were kind of holding back because you just weren't going to get excited about, you know, having better numbers against MAC teams, if you needed proof, I think you got that proof on Saturday in the third quarter on what this Kansas team can do. And of course, Khalil Herbert, a near record-setting day.
But not good enough to make him Big 12 Offensive Player of the Week. How does that make sense? The best rushing performance in the nation this year, but he's not the Big 12 Player of the Week.
How about that?
Collusion. All right, there's something going on. I'm going to get to the bottom of it. That's not right. That's the best rushing performance you've personally seen from a KU running back since when?
Since Tony Sands.
What, 396? Was that the final tally for Sands?
And the one before that was Nolan Cromwell, on like the second time he had ever played quarterback.
And those two guys are number one and two in school history in best performances. Number three, may have heard of him, Gale Sayers. And then Khalil Herbert at four. That's pretty elite company.
It is. It is. And I'm going to break this down a little bit later on how it happened, why it happened, and what Kansas fans should be excited about going forward, because there was something that just jumped out at me. I even called you. Thanks for the no pickup yesterday, by the way.
Sorry.
I even called you when I saw this on tape. It was an epiphany. And I said, I got to call my man Nick.
You called me. And I didn't answer, and we played phone tag for a little bit. And so I'll be learning this for the first time as well. So you'll get my natural...
Because I'm not telling you now, since you didn't pick up my call.
You feel slighted. So I'm going to get your natural, organic reaction, as you'll get mine as well. Certainly, I think on the surface, especially in that third quarter, I remember in between the third and the fourth quarter, I said to you, I go, man, that's the best half of football KU's played all year. And you said, dude, it was just one quarter. And I go, yeah, but it was that impressive. Like, it felt like a half of football, because when a team is disappointing on that side of the ball, you can kind of get sucked into, when they do finally play well, just kind of wondering, okay, are they going to be able to hold it up? And unfortunately, KU didn't, but I think that you're crazy if there weren't plenty of positives to take away, and I get it. Doesn't make you feel any better about the result. It's not going to put a W in the column, but with this program, where they've been, where they're trying to head to, you do have to sometimes stop and take some of those moral victories and kind of put things into perspective of where you're at. And offensively, certainly a lot to be proud of, but for the first time this season, I think we did kind of see them bear down defensively. wheels came off a little bit in the fourth quarter, but you got to take whatever you can get at this point if you're Kansas.
You know, we have so many great Kansas fans. I just hope people kind of look at these people and what they've endured. Because Kansas football, I mean, they've had some dry patches before, you know, before the run that we had with the Orange Bowl and the Mangino years. You know, sometimes it doesn't happen the way you want it to. And you don't go to the sporting goods store and go buy another jersey of the team that just happens to be trending at this time. I think one thing you have to do as a fan, take the whole team together. I mean, I've heard people say, well, it's, you know, just putting all the blame on the defense. You know what? You know, that defense has held Kansas up through some lean years these past 7 years when Clint's been around. And yeah, they're having a tough time right now, but it's a team. And you know, special teams has gotten better. I thought the defense got better. Hassan defense in particular, you know, made a big improvement. And we've got one of the best linebackers in the Big 12. And yes, Dorrance Armstrong is as good as advertised. Does he have the numbers that he would like to have right now? No, but I think those numbers are going to come a little bit later. So Kansas as a team, that's what you need to be a big fan of and not saying, but what about the, you know, defense, offense, special teams? They are a team. This is amateur football. This is your team.
Yeah, and I think that, like, from my perspective, I almost use it in the other direction. I use it to say, when people want to say, oh, this team stinks, they can't stop anybody, everybody's just going to put up 50, 60 points against them. Well, you know what? The offense, you just had a running back rush for nearly 300 yards. It was one of the best offensive performances that KU has had in the history of the Big 12. Yes, in the history of the Big 12. It was one of their five best performances ever against a Big 12 opponent, and it was their first game against a Big 12 defense all year long. And remember, you've got to use the conversion chart. So giving up 50 points against West Virginia in the Big 12, that's like giving up 30 in the ACC. It's like giving up 17 in the SEC where there is no offense. So Big 12 offenses are going to put up points. And I think at least there is some solace to be found in the fact that, hey, maybe KU is one of those offenses. Maybe they are one of those offenses that can put up some points this year. It was a forgettable game for Peyton Bender. And I think you're crazy if you don't think that he's not going to have better performances later on this year. You're not going to get nearly 300 from Khalil Herbert or whoever's running the ball every single time. Probably not again this year. Because that's why it was such a historical performance. But there is plenty to look at and be encouraged about. David is going to give us his big reason why to be encouraged about Kansas football the rest of the way in 2017. But up next, we are going to switch gears. Late Night in the Fog coming up on Saturday. So let's talk to the head coach himself. Bill Self joins us on the other side.
Okay, Rock Chalk Sports Talk, pleased to bring in Hall of Fame basketball coach, our man, Bill Self, joins us. Coach, again, congratulations. It's great to talk to you again, but thanks for joining us.
Dave, how you doing, man?
I'm well. Certainly better second half. We talked about that football game, and the guys made a nice comeback.
I don't know anything about football, but you know, we all think we know a little bit more than what we do. But I thought the third quarter we looked great, and I think the score definitely indicated that. And then they made a couple of plays in the fourth that kind of put us behind the eight ball, but I do think we showed some promise without question.
It's always an event, late night, and 2017, which is this Saturday, 6:30 to 9:30, and of course doors open a couple hours before that. What can you tell us? I know there's some things that you have to wait on, but what's going to be the same? What's going to be maybe tweaked a little bit from what we've been enjoying in the past?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the women cannot participate by playing. They can participate in you know, skits or whatnot, but they can't legally start practice, I don't believe, until Sunday. So, and of course, you can't do late night on Sunday. So it'll be just the men playing, and then of course the women will be participating in all the other stuff, and that's basically the biggest difference. Except we're going to have well-known live entertainment. That I think that the athletic department will probably release tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. So, and young people will absolutely love it. So, it'll be fun once again. And of course, with us, you can't ever talk specifics, but, you know, it's a great tip-off to our season. It's something the players look forward to, and they understand why we go through boot camp and some other things to see how they're received by this crowd for the first time, and which is really cool. And of course, from a recruiting perspective, it never hurts to have 16,000 people in there to watch the guys practice. So I'm excited about it, and certainly, you know, we're just fired up to get going.
Hey, Coach, Nick Schwert here. Appreciate you taking a few minutes to hop on with us today. I know with late night, generally, it's our first chance to get a glimpse at that year's team. A little different this year simply because we were treated to that Italian exhibition, got to see you guys play over there for four games. Is it a misconception to say that perhaps you guys are a little farther ahead, and at least from your perspective, knowing what you've got for this season, than you would be in most years?
I think on the perimeter we're further ahead. I love our five guards. I mean, there's no question that when you look at Devontae and Spee and LeGerald and Malik, there's four, you know, guys that we know can do it. And then you throw in Marcus Garrett, who is going to be terrific. I mean, there's five really good perimeter players. The question is we're just so young inside. You know, you got Mitch is our biggest veteran coming back, and he's a sophomore that didn't play much. And Udoka would have played a ton, but he obviously got hurt last year. And, you know, he's finally 18. He just turned 18 last week. So at least we got a little bit of age there. And then, of course, Billy is a freshman. So that's a lot of pressure on some underclassmen to perform well on the front line. And then, of course, there'll be times where we can obviously go small also. But it's going to be a fun – it's a fun group. It's a pretty athletic group. We're certainly different than last year because last year we had probably more star power, and this year I think we'll have more. To be honest, I think we'll have more good players. But we, you know, I don't know that we'll have a guy to be National Player of the Year out of this group, but certainly or the fourth pick. But we got a bunch of good guys that I think can play at a pretty high level.
Hall of Fame head coach Bill Self joins us on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Malik Newman, he was a guy that I got a chance to warm up because I came to the field house so early last year, and I watched him and I talked to you a little bit at lunchtime because I was just so thrilled to see that his presence out there, so physical, seemingly could play multiple positions. But after a chance to see him in Italy and, of course, around developing a little bit, well, what's your thoughts on Malik and how many positions can he present for you today this year?
Well, I would think just to make it easy, you know, Devontae is the point guard of the group. There's no question about that. But could Malik play some emergency point? Yes. LeGerald for sure could. Marcus Garrett could, without question. And so I like guys that are interchangeable. So when I look at Malik, I look at him. He's big. He's athletic enough to defend a one. He's big enough to defend a three. He can score off the catch, but he can also go get it off the bounce. He's a versatile guy. But I kind of see our guards as just one position, to be honest with you. As long as one of them can be a point, and one of them's big enough to defend a three, and Malik can do a little bit of both. I'm excited about him. But I'm excited about all those guys. But Malik is probably the best prototypical what you consider a shooting guard that we've had since we've been here. I know that before we got here, you know, Boshi was real popular with everybody, and he was that prototypical, you know, guy that kind of played off the ball, that kind of had a green light and could light it up from downtown and score punts. Score points in bunches, and certainly Malik is very capable of doing that. Matter of fact, I think he had 25 on 12 shots in Italy in the first, what was it, the first 11 minutes or something, one game. So he's capable of putting up some numbers.
Similar size as JoJo White. I know that's a little bit before your time, but let me just throw that out there. I know JoJo was more of a point, but it's kind of exciting to see that physical body out there.
Right. Well, he does have a good body. And you know, LeGerald's got a great body. He's long. Spee's long, got a good body. Devontae's, you know, he's strong. And Marcus Garrett is extremely strong, especially for a young kid. So on the perimeter, we're pretty good. And Billy looks like a Billy looks like a guy that you know, you think would be well beyond his years physically, and so does Doak. And so, you know, you look at us and you say, that's a pretty good-looking team. But do we have a point guard that can get inside of people like Frank could? And do we have, you know, somebody that can, you know, really score on the block yet? And those are things that questions that we really haven't had answered yet.
And besides Malik, whether it is, you know, Devonte, whether it's Svi, whether it's LeGerald Vick, Marcus Garrett, you know, watching those guys in Italy and for some of them over the past couple of years, it seems like none of those guys are really pigeonholed into one position. Like all of them have some versatility. What kind of luxuries does that afford you, knowing that you've only really got three guys in the front court and you won't have Sam at your disposal until that second semester?
Well, I tell all the recruits, and I mean it, I want to recruit positionless players, you know, guys that you can put out there and everybody can play with them. I never believed in kind of pigeonholing a guy, saying he's a one or two or three or four or five, except we know Doak's a five, so to speak. But I like to have guys where you do the same things for multiple guys on your team. And once you get into half-court offense, we ball screen for the three-man. We ball screen for the two-man. We can ball screen for the four-man like we did last year with Josh. I like that. So I do think we're a little versatile. I think we're a little light in the point guard position, to be honest. We're going to be counting on Devonte, but I'm not sure that we really have anybody else that has any experience playing back there at that spot. And I know we're a little thin up front, but foul problems and injuries could be a big issue. But I am excited about them. I think this has a chance to be a very fun team.
And Sam Cumliffe, what kind of shot in the arm would you get from Sam in December?
Well, I really don't know. I think he'll definitely be an asset. There's no question. But you know, there's a pretty good logjam of guys to go through to get there. When you stop and think about Marcus Garrett, who has really, really, really been impressive so far, and probably understands how to help us win as much as anybody else. So I think that Sam will be a nice addition. But when we get our full complement of guys, I could see us playing small quite a bit just to make sure we can keep our best players in the game.
Bill, I can hardly wait for Saturday. Are you firing up a Harley, or maybe that's too much info?
Yeah, I can tell you this. There will be no Harley. And okay. If there is one, I won't be on it.
Hey, we can hardly wait. Thanks for the treat to this every year. And, again, congratulations. Everyone in Lawrence and Jayhawk Nation is your biggest fan and so happy for you.
Thanks, Coach.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. Have a good afternoon.
All right.
You too.
Hall of Fame head coach Bill Self.
He's been putting the Lawrence in Lawrence since 1977. And now he's putting it in your ear holes on Rock Chalk Sports Talk once again. David Lawrence returns to Rock Chalk Sports Talk as a special guest host alongside Nick Schwert every Monday from 4 to 6 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
We'll get to the mailbag with David Lawrence coming up in the next segment. I'm Nick Schwert, Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We're going to get to some Big 12 whip-around talk, but I'd be remiss if we got much further into the show without at least talking about what happened yesterday and over the weekend with politics, not just creeping into the sports world, but I mean, absolutely flamboyantly running into the room and taking over the party, because that's what happened when Donald Trump referred to the NFL players who kneel as SOBs, encouraged the owners of these teams to fire them if they kneel at a game, encouraged fans to boycott the NFL, to walk out of games if their players are kneeling on the field. And that has sparked, I mean, conversations across the world, not just the sporting world, but now all of a sudden you can't clamor to keep sports out of politics because they have really introduced themselves to the world of sports in a big, big way. I feel like it's just at this point, I don't even know what we're arguing about anymore. I don't even know what we are arguing, what we are discussing, because everybody seems to have a different route they want to take concerning the protest during the national anthem. What are they protesting? Why are they protesting? Should they be allowed to protest? I just feel like this conversation has got very convoluted at this point. I'm not sure where we go from here.
And did you include the NBA?
Right. Yeah. Him, Steph Curry saying that he didn't want to go visit the White House, and Donald Trump coming out and saying, you hesitated. Well, now you're uninvited.
Rescinding.
Or is that what we're calling it? Rescinding when, like, David invite, I invite David to my party, and David says, I don't want to go to your party, Nick. And I say, well, good, because you're not invited anymore anyways.
Yeah, because you and all of your friends now, I've rescinded my offer. You know, that it's tearing the country apart in a lot of ways, and it's hard to see, you know, what's good about things. And moving forward, I'm sure they're going to think of some creative ways to address the problems that really are, other than the fact no one likes being talked to like that by the President of the United States, who has enough on his plate right now. And I don't remember, I've been doing this show with you and Brian for at least a decade, where, you know, this has kind of forced our hand to play into that. You know, I can't speak for all the people that are out there. I'm working on a guest that we're going to have, because what comes to my mind when I think of the people that have fought for our country, the servicemen in the past, and you know, those are some of the people that have the hard feelings with the people that are not standing at attention or not coming out. But we've had also some people of color that have fought for our country. When they come back home, you know, they can't drink at a water fountain downtown. And, you know, they have to go in a restaurant in the back door. You know, they can come back maimed from serving their country, but yet they're treated as second and third class citizens by their country itself. And I'm working on a guest at a near future show that was also in the service and dealt with that kind of thing I think there's some opinions that I really want to listen to in moving forward and talking about how I think we should deal with this, because, you know, certainly there are some things that are still happening with the law enforcement, with police, with some unfairness to people of color, to people of all minorities that need to be addressed. But right now, I think it's being all unleashed on the President of the United States for doing some just crazy stuff.
Right. And that's, you, I think you used the word that I've heard a lot of this weekend, and I think it's very accurate. It's divisive. It's making people choose a side, right? Because when the president talks and he picks a side, you are either with what he says, you either agree with what he says, or you disagree. And when he says those SOBs need to stand up, when he says they need to be fired if they're kneeling, at that point, as a United States citizen, you are essentially forced to say, yes, he's right. Those SOBs do need to stand up, or no, he's not. And that, to me, is just, we're getting away from the point. And whether you disagree or agree with what they're protesting, one thing needs to be abundantly clear. These men are not protesting the American flag. They are not protesting the national anthem. Colin Kaepernick, at the beginning of last season, he sat during the national anthem because he wanted to raise awareness and he wanted to protest what he felt to be racial inequalities in the country. And he didn't want to stand up for a flag that is not holding up its end of the bargain. And he's not protesting the military. That's not what the national anthem's about. That's not what football is about. That's not what the American flag is about. And if we want to be completely accurate, what Donald Trump did was hopefully, maybe, help Colin Kaepernick accomplish his goal, which is to get this conversation started. But in order for that to happen, we can't get caught up on all of the little stuff that doesn't matter, on people boycotting the NFL, people calling these guys entitled, spoiled athletes, as if they just showed up one day and the NFL owners said, hey, you look pretty big. You might be pretty good at football. Here's $100 million. I mean, David, you played college football at a high level. Like, you understand the sacrifices that it takes and the hard work that it takes to get to that level. These guys are not entitled. They are not privileged. They work hard to get where they're at, and I don't have a problem with them using their platform to try and institute change. Whether you agree with it or not is beside the point. If you're not willing to listen to what they have to say or as to try and figure out why they are doing what they're doing, then we're just going to spend the next however many years arguing over this and not get anywhere, and I think that would be a crying shame.
No question about that. It's going to force America to really take a look at itself And so I'm thinking in the end run that there's going to be some things that are going to help make us a better country. But right now, I think the concern on a lot of us is that we have a president that is not really asking people around him, you know, for advice or throwing things out. He's doing things without consulting anyone. And if that's the way it is in everything he does and dealing with North Korea, then you just got to be concerned a little bit about the safety moving forward. The fact that here's a guy that's doing these power trips and wants to make a point and doesn't really care what the people around him are advising him on. He's just going to do it.
Right.
And that's for the first time, you know, because in the past I've always thought, well, of course, they're going to think through that and they're going to talk to all these very smart people, bright people around him, and then they're going to come up with the best decision possible, and then he's going to read it like it's his idea, but it's really not. It's from this room full of smart people. It's their ideas. Well, Donald Trump right now, he's making decisions and saying things where I don't think he's listening to anyone.
Right. He's a fire starter, and that's what helped get him elected, but at this point, you divide enough people, you get enough people, you make it for enough people where they have to pick a side that you're going to have everybody divided, and I don't think that's kind of what the point of that office and the duties of the president in the United States is. But that's why I'm just a lowly radio host, and old Donnie's making the big bucks. He's David Lawrence. I'm Nick Schwert. We'll talk more about that coming up at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. But I do want to do a little Big 12 whip around. And all of a sudden, we've got a new sexy sleeper pick to win the conference, because it was Oklahoma State, right? The Fighting Mullets and Mike Gundy. But TCU went to Stillwater, and they did a lot of butt-whooping on Saturday, David, and that was a convincing win. I don't know why we should be surprised at all. I don't think it's – Gary Patterson is eventually going to fall into the Bill Snyder's territory of every single year. We talk about how underappreciated the job that he's done in Fort Worth is, the way we do that with Bill Snyder in Manhattan, and we'll say, hey, this TCU team, they could be pretty good. They've got some athletes. Gary Patterson's a good coach, and then all of a sudden they're in the top 10. Why are we – is TCU becoming the next Kansas State? Is Gary Patterson going to carry that torch of just a team we always kind of overlook? We always say, hey, they're going to be good, but they're never going to be great. TCU is a great football team, and they have to be looked at as a very serious contender in the Big 12.
Well, since the Big 12 began, I mean, TCU has been the best defense.
No question.
And it's been a Gary Patterson defense. And while, you know, most all the teams in the Big 12 have had their share of great offenses, TCU is the only team that's kind of hung their hat on being a defense. And, of course, Meacham is really the guy that was responsible for bringing the offense and the air raid to TCU, which allowed them to score lots of points, because otherwise, you know, they were winning, you know, 14-3 and 17-7. But I doubted that Oklahoma State could run up and down the field on TCU. I really did. Did I think that TCU could go in there and win the game? No, I would not have picked that. But when you have a defense, you have an opportunity to win. Just like running the football is what Kansas has, that gives you a chance. But having a defense to stop people, and I think one thing they got overestimated was the Oklahoma State defense. They had come up and looked pretty impressive in their early games, and we didn't see that defense on the field in Stillwater on Saturday.
No, we didn't. And with TCU, it's so funny you talk about them having the best defense in the Big 12 since they joined the conference. I'll remember, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, when it was after Trevon Boykin had kind of come along, and it was the year before he became that really legitimate Heisman candidate. And we were down in Dallas for Big 12 Media Days. This would have been 2015. And I remember talking with somebody at lunch, you know, about TCU and how it was so fascinating that Gary Patterson had kind of made a name for himself even before he came to the conference as being this great defensive mind, and how they were constantly amongst the best defenses in the country. But going into that season, all of a sudden, it was the offense that was leading the way in 2015, and it was the defense that had kind of fallen behind a little bit. I didn't think about this until now, but that's because there was a guy who we didn't really know of at the time named Doug Meacham, who had taken over the reins
right
of that offense and turned them into one of the best offenses in the country. Now, I don't think they're one of the best offenses in the country this year, but I think they're certainly capable enough to hang. You know, 44 points, again, go back to the conversion chart, that's only about 20 points in the SEC, but that's good enough to get the job done. We always talk about there's no defense in the Big 12. That's what the national media will say about the Big 12. That's fine, but you guys in the ACC and the SEC, you don't have offenses like the Big 12 has. And TCU, I think, certainly has it. We know about the defense, but they certainly have a good enough offense to hang with, I think, some of the best teams in the country.
They do. But in the bottom end of the whole equation is the fact that you're going to have to play defense to beat the top teams in the country, such as Alabama. You got to be able to stop people. And then you've got to have an offensive line that can go toe-to-toe. And that's what I think. I would still give the edge to Oklahoma right now in that matchup. And I think when they do meet, that's going to be in Norman, Oklahoma. I'd have TCU number two. At number three, I've got a tie between K-State, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, and I have Texas Tech just a little bit under them. And then I've got Texas and Iowa State on the next line, then I have Kansas, and then I have Baylor right now.
So Baylor's close call against Oklahoma, not enough to pick them up from the doldrums of the Big 12 cellar.
And just not, you know, there was nothing about those losses, the previous losses, that gave you a feel. I mean, Kansas has certainly played the tougher opponents when you look at the entire schedule. But yeah, Baylor showed that they had the ability to jump up and play some people when, you know, it was an onside kick that gave them the opportunity to win a ball game.
So when I see scores like that, 49-41 Oklahoma of Baylor, since I have a simple mind, David, I can't use nuance or context to think through these things. So I automatically, my mind races to either, hey, Baylor's actually not that bad, or hey, Oklahoma's not as good as we thought they were. Which one of those statements is truer to being correct?
Baylor has recruited some talent, and they lost a lot of those kids, but their most recent year, I mean, they've got a good freshman class. They were ranked pretty high, although I don't certainly put that much stock into the rankings. I know enough to take from that, you know, that you're going to have some kids. But right now in scoring offense, Baylor ranks at the bottom of the Big 12 with 29 points a game. Kansas just above that at 32. When you look at scoring defense, Kansas ranks at the bottom, giving up 39 points. Baylor, 37. Total offensive numbers, Baylor's at the bottom. Kansas is number 7. Total defense numbers, Kansas 9, Baylor 10. But do you disagree with any of my picks above? For instance, do you have feelings about K-State, West Virginia, Oklahoma State?
Yes. I still think that Oklahoma State, I think there's a clear top three in the Big 12. And I think it ends with Oklahoma State at three. I am not sold on West Virginia. I think they, after seeing what they did on Saturday defensively, I think they are going to take some big-time lumps in the Big 12. Like, I think there are going to be a couple games when they just get absolutely ran out the building. Like, against Oklahoma State, like, those might be...
So you're saying because Kansas rushed the ball for 300-plus yards?
That's going to be a problem.
West Virginia...
That's going to be a problem.
Can't be very good? Are you saying that?
No. That's a giant leap from what I'm saying. I'm not saying that now all of a sudden West Virginia sucks and they'll never be good again. I'm saying that they were exposed a little bit by KU, and that there are going to be some games across the Big 12 in which they are going to take some big-time lumps offensively, and they're going to lose some games. I think they're going to lose some games like 50-30. I think they're going to lose some games like 65-59. Like, that's going to be a problem. That was the most offense in a game between two teams combined in KU history. I don't know whether to be proud of that or to be ashamed of it.
Well, let's say this, and for the people that aren't as old, that you know, Kansas football's been around since 1928. So anytime you're talking about offense and record numbers that include offense, you have to realize you're not talking about 128 years. You're talking about 17 years, because that's the only years that these spread offenses.
That's still a long time. That's still a lot of games.
That is. So, yeah, you look at it in a 17-year period. you know, this is the most total number of yards. Understand that Will Greer, I was impressed with what he could do. He ran the ball better than I gave him credit going into this game. I thought his receivers on the outside, particularly Sills, was very impressive. White and Sims have speed as well. And that nasty little fullback they have, Elijah Wellman.
Uh-huh.
I always call him the toughest guy in West Virginia because it seems like they have an open tryout to see who the toughest guy in the state of West Virginia is, and then he's going to play that H-back. And going in front of Justin Crawford is going to make him pretty good. So I don't know about those three, but I'm going to put them all even for right now. Texas is a real crazy one that kind of boggles your mind. I saw the most dominating defensive front that I've seen this year when Texas played at USC. They totally beat them up. If Texas would have had any quarterback that could make plays or an offense that could throw the ball down the field, then Texas would have definitely beat USC. They did not, but you just can't take it out of your mind that that Texas front seven could be that good. And if they are that good, they could beat Oklahoma, in Dallas. They probably won't because, you know, I don't know how Texas is going to score, and they probably will turn the ball over. But Tech has been playing better than we thought coming into the year. And Iowa State is just kind of right where we're at, and, you know, just – they could go either way. I mean, they played Iowa good, but they didn't beat Iowa. So it's kind of all based on the fact that you played well and didn't win, and that's kind of a slippery slope. But Kansas State losing on the road to Vandy, it didn't look that bad until Vandy had about $100 million scored on them against Alabama. And so now it doesn't look as good, but then you just can't do that score comparison.
Oh, by the way, we've got a new update in my – I guess I would just call it my book of fandom for my book of or my man crush file on Baker Mayfield, because he continues to remain my favorite quarterback in the country. Did you hear what he had to say to Baylor before the game? There was a little scuffle at midfield during pregame warmups, and they're chirping back and forth one another, Baylor and Oklahoma. And then all of a sudden, emerging from the background, the smallest guy on the field, I'm trotting up is Baker Mayfield in a cutoff shirt with his belly showing. Not flattering at all, because it's not like this dude Sean Oakman out there, right? He's just little tiny Baker Mayfield. And
not the name to bring up.
I'm just saying, as far as intimidation, when he had the cutoff.
I know.
That was.
Not PC, though, not Oakman.
Well, when Baker Mayfield comes out and he starts screaming at Baylor, "You must have forgot who your daddy was. I'm going to have to remind you. I'm going to have to spank you today." And, well, he didn't necessarily spank them. I mean, an 8-point win isn't necessarily what I would consider to be a spanking. But I love his – I don't want to call it arrogance, even though it probably is arrogance. But I love his cockiness. You talk about swag. You want to talk about swag? Baker Mayfield has swag, David. You must have forgot who your daddy was. Between that and him planting the flag in the O up against Ohio State, this guy is absolutely the leader in clubhouse for my favorite player of 2017.
Interesting you said that, because I did think the swag thing, the confidence thing, and doing what he did in Columbus was pretty cool. But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm a Heisman voter for the past 15 years. He probably took himself out of my vote for the Heisman based
for that exact reason?
Talking crap to a bad team. Getting a personal foul against a team that just needed a shot in the arm.
Wait, can you talk crap to a bad team if you back it up and then you just absolutely
no.
What?
No.
You even go if you on go the road, throw, you like, can talk crap. Touchdowns?
Talk crap in Columbus. You know, against a team that was favored against you, but you've got lowly Baylor and you're playing lowly Baylor and you have to talk crap against them, and You're fighting for a win, and it would have been one of the most embarrassing losses in the history of Oklahoma football, and you were adding to that by the fact that you got a personal foul at a key time
of
the game.
As a booster for the Baker Mayfield fan club, is there anything that we can do to perhaps get him back in the running for the Heisman in your book?
Shut up and play football, dude. And when it's against Baylor, wait till you go against Alabama,
all right,
then bring that swag back out, but not against teams like Baylor.
Fair enough. He's David Lawrence. I'm Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. It's RCST on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Up next, let's open up the mailbag and see what questions you have in store for my guy DL.
What happens when you combine a Kansas football legend with a 20-something loudmouth? The best dang sports talk show in the area. Rock Chalk Sports Talk has a new guest host, and his name is David Lawrence. Catch DL and Nick Schwert every Monday from 4 to 6 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Be tuning in every single day this week for your chance to qualify for the What's Your Number giveaway brought to you by the Kansas Speedway, and you could win two tickets to the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Hollywood Casino 400 at the Kansas Speedway on October the 22nd. It's about 10 till 5 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. In studio for just a little bit while longer with David Lawrence, Derek Johnson with us as well. And of course, a Monday tradition, we open up the mailbag, see what questions you have in store for my guy, DL. Let's not waste any time. First up, DL. I was pleasantly surprised with Saturday's game against West Virginia. The defense continues to struggle, and the offense isn't perfect, but they are putting up points. Why is it that we look solid against a good Big 12 team, yet we lose by not too much of a difference versus MAC schools? Tony.
So the question by Tony is, why have we improved, or we looked better against...
I don't know. I was confused by the question as well. It seems like he's asking... Why did we look better against a Big 12 school than we did against a MAC school?
Well, I think it is, you know, in doing the scout on West Virginia and these other teams, West Virginia was clearly better than the MAC teams. You know, the thing about the MAC teams, and I'm not trying to come up with excuses, but here is one. Regardless of where Kansas is at, when they play Central Michigan or Ohio, there is a natural... burning desire by those guys, because Kansas is from a Power 5 conference, to beat them in the worst way. And so you're like a minus 10 on motivation. Even though your guys really want to win, really bad, need the win, they're going to have more incentive to beat you than you're going to have incentive to beat them. So that changes, because Kansas immediately... playing West Virginia goes in, and they're the ones that are the clear underdog. And, you know, everyone says, how can Kansas play with West Virginia here and here? But, yeah, West Virginia is way better than Ohio or Central Michigan. Not that those two teams couldn't beat West Virginia on a given day, because they would have equal incentive to beat West Virginia. But Kansas did play against a much faster team that has more NFL players. I don't know that the MAC teams had any, but they were solid football players, and they had a burning incentive and desire to beat the Power 5 team.
Up next, David, Khalil Herbert is maybe the greatest player of all time. At the very least, the best Kansas running back ever. I'm only being a little hyperbolic, but have you already prepared what you will say for your Herbert Ring of Honor monologue on the radio? Steve.
It might go like this. Khalil Herbert, a great running back, but then Taylor Martin took over in 2017 and ended up with more total yards than Khalil.
Is that a prediction right there?
No, it is not. It's not a prediction, but I'm just saying, without any disrespect to Khalil Herbert, there were some big gashes in the front line of defense for the Mountaineers, and Taylor Martin is a little bit faster. But I loved what Herbert does. And what I like is how he always seems to be running straight ahead, but the ability to make moves. I mean, he made moves on guys and made people miss. But you notice he's always going straight ahead. He's not challenging. He's not going lateral. He's always going straight ahead with just some slight little adjustments and making some moves, making people miss, but always moving forward, low center of gravity. And how many times did he fumble?
How many times? Zero.
Zero.
That's a good number when it comes to fumbles,
Herbert,
by the way.
Could be. I mean, he could be in the Ring of Honor someday. A sophomore from Coral Springs, Florida. How about all these Floridians? We haven't really brought that up, but both quarterbacks and Herbert, Floridians.
You know what they say about Floridians?
Watch out. for the Hurricanes.
That's right. That's what they say. This is the mailbag with DL, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I didn't have anything prepared, so I'm glad you stepped in there. Mr. Lawrence, I am so incredibly pumped for the new renovations to Memorial Stadium. What all do you know about it? Will it have more seats? What will be the first part constructed and added to? Kevin, I like how...
Why are you laughing? Those are very pertinent questions.
No, because this is like the third question we've got about the renovations, and they always ask them to you as if you've been withholding information from us the whole time, like you're in on the construction process and like you're mapping out the blueprints for the new stadium.
Well, I just know they're my former students if they say Mr. Lawrence, so I'm glad that they wrote in. And no, not anymore, although I don't think... anything in the release was said about the number of seats, but I think it's going to be comparable. Okay. I think you need to be at 50,000. You know, I don't think you want to come in far less than that to be in the Power Five. But just, yeah, better vantage point, better home field advantage, better amenities. If you want to choose to drink and eat, you've got plenty of opportunity to do that. And when you yell, you're going to be heard more. You're going to be enclosed around. There's not going to be bad seats. Those are all the things that we're looking forward to in this new stadium. It's going to sound louder. And granted, the stadium we're at sounds loud when we get 52,000 in there. And you know, they need to be ready because this Kansas football team's going to win a game there this year. You don't want to miss that opportunity. And if Kansas would have beat West Virginia, it would have been a better win than Texas win. I don't think anyone really feels that way because Texas still has that name.
But they're a better team.
Like, but they're a better team. They're a better team. It would have been a bigger win. And granted, yes, you can easily laugh at that statement if you're from the state of Missouri or if you're a K-State fan because we lost by a lot.
No, nobody in Missouri gets to laugh this year because they suck. That's true. Missouri football is terrible this year.
That's true. They're having a hard time.
Did you take some time to just kind of reflect on
this? Let's have this moment of silence. Okay, let's move in.
All right, we'll move on with the next question. David, what is wrong with our defense? That 4-2-5 formation just doesn't work. Even last year when our defense was supposedly better, we gave up 40 a game. Change everything, use our backups. I don't care. Why do we stink? Jason.
Well, I'm not talking to Jason on this, but let me just say that anyone that tries to make it out a defense versus offense mentality, you are being Donald Trump and pitting
You're being divisive.
Divisive, and you're pitting the NASCAR fans versus professional football or NBA fans. Hey, we're a team here.
Let's be football fans, not defense fans, not offense fans.
Let's be Jayhawk fans, right?
I like that.
Let's be Jayhawk fans. I've been covering Clint Bowen since the kid's been in high school or since he's been at Kansas. And I believe in this guy. And again, there's been years where his defensive numbers, they were holding up pretty strong when you looked at him across to the brethren in the Big 12 Conference. It's a team thing. And right now, he's got a very young secondary. I'm confident that he's going to be making some tweaks, some adjustments, and we're going to see a defense continue to improve. I got full confidence in Dorrance Armstrong. He made some big-time plays, and he was close to more. And I realize you can't be close. You know, you don't get extra points. You don't get drafted. You don't get all conference because you're close. You got to make sacks. You got to get some forced fumbles. You got to, you know, get some quarterback hurries. He's got some of those. But I love our guys. I do. And I think J.J. Holmes has been the surprise player on the defensive side. Daniel Wise, he's a guy that's going to play in the NFL someday. And Joe Dineen is simply leading the Big 12 in tackles by like three. Hassan Defense had a solid second half against West Virginia. And I'm a believer in Bryce Tornaden. I think he is going to be a big-time player at the University of Kansas. And he's been kind of thrown into the fire. These guys are learning. You know, Mike Lee's got to be careful. I don't want him to hurt himself, man. He throws himself those vicious hits. And it's just amazing to me how they immediately called personal foul, flag, and targeting when he hit him in the chest, the receiver in the chest. And, you know, it's always the protecting of receivers. I get it. Let's protect everyone then.
All right, we have to take a break. We're up against it. So you got 15 seconds before we go and end this for today. Have you ever seen a fumble that traveled 10 yards in the air before?
Not once. Never. Nada.
Well, now you have.
I'm going to go home. I'm going to watch it again. Even if you didn't have complete control of that ball, I don't know how you make
sense.
That call.
It doesn't make sense.
Sometimes I think we try to overthink it.
Right.
We try to overthink.
Let's zoom in. Let's get a grip and see when the ball started to come loose. It traveled 10 yards. That's not a fumble.
Yeah. I think someone's got to come in with authority and say, you know what? That ball went 10 yards ahead. That's not a fumble. That's an incompletion. Let's move on.
He's David Lawrence. Thanks for stopping by. Always a good time, man.
It's great to be here. I look forward to this week, to late night, and getting ready for those Red Raiders.
5 o'clock hour coming up next. New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. All right, it's about 25 after the hour here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. With Derek Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert. Appreciate you hanging out with us. If you missed our conversation with Kansas head basketball coach Bill Self earlier in the show, we'll get to that coming up later on in the hour. And he has his second commitment for the 2018 class, David McCormick, 6'10", 255-pound center. He is the number 26th-ranked player in the class of 2018, according to 24/7 Sports, the number 2 center in the class. He was at one point up to 300 pounds, and he's now down to 255. And he said the way that he did it was by just cutting out fast foods. No more fast foods for David McCormick. And he's an athlete, so that's a good decision for him. But I got to think that we all could have benefited from an awakening like that in high school. Like, right? Like, in high school, that was not even a thought that I should stop eating this stuff because it's not good for me. This kid figured it out, lost 45 pounds. That's pretty impressive.
You know, I say just do you, though. Charles Barkley was, like, famous for, he said before every game, this is when he was in the NBA, he would go to McDonald's, he would get the fish filet meal, 2 fish fillets, he would get a Diet Coke with it. That would be his pregame meal for every game. So I guess it's possible. I mean, but if you're looking to lose weight, I'm sure they're going to have him come in and lose even more weight when you come to KU. Yeah.
It's not about losing weight. It's just about distributing it. Yeah, yeah, being more fit. Who was it? Chad Johnson, Chad Ochocinco. He said he would eat McDonald's like 10 times a week. And he was one of the fastest players in the NFL. But that's what happens when you can work out for a living. Like when your job is to be fit and you're working out 2 times a day, then yeah, you probably can eat whatever you want, at least on the outside. Your insides are probably rotting away, but at least you look good and you can run fast.
Well, it's like Usain Bolt at the Olympics in, I believe, 2012 when they were in London. All he ate, because he was unfamiliar with the rest of the food at the village, he only ate chicken nuggets. So, more power to you.
Yeah, because they did have a McDonald's there, and they said that the line for the Olympic athletes was like around the block because nobody else wanted to eat anything else. Okay, David McCormick, 6'10", 255. He chose KU over North Carolina State, Duke, UCLA, and a few others. He was on the set of a local television TV station, and he had the hats of the 3 schools on the table in front of him. He unbuttoned his shirt and he had a KU t-shirt on underneath, which kind of got me thinking about what I would do. I'm not creative enough to think about what would happen if people wanted me to come play sports for them, because it's just so far from reality that it's almost a waste of time. But I'm thinking it would have been a little cooler if he would have unbuttoned that shirt and instead of a KU t-shirt underneath it, he had Kansas Jayhawks spelled out in sunscreen.
Oh, I thought you were going to say tattooed.
No, sunscreen. I'm going with the beach theme for this one. He rips the shirt off. He's got Kansas Jayhawks and sunscreen across his chest. Then he puts on sunglasses, pulls off from the side a pina colada in one of those coconut glasses.
Non-alcoholic, of course.
Non-alcoholic pina colada in one of those coconut, you know, drink glasses. And then he just kicks his feet up on the table and starts sipping. Now, that's an original idea. That's something that nobody has done before. Because if you're going to commit to a school, and unless you're like Mitchell Robinson, you're probably only going to do it one time, you want to make it special, you want to make it memorable, and you want to try and find something that nobody else has done. I'm just saying, if you're looking for ideas on how to commit to your university, I've got plenty brewing up in my brain. He said he wants to major in journalism and be a sports announcer.
After basketball.
He's coming for all of us, man. I don't know anything about this kid. Never spoke to him, but I have a feeling we're going to hit it off really well. Because the first thing I'm ever going to say to him is, hey, guess what, dude? I'm sort of a sports announcer. Pretty cool, huh? He's going to come to me for life advice, and I'm going to come to him for basketball advice. We can, you know, help me help you. He's from Norfolk, Virginia, attended Oak Hill High School, and he was teammates with Billy Preston there. He averaged 10 points, 9 rebounds a game at Oak Hill last year, 15 points and 10 rebounds on the AAU circuit. The scouting report on him is that he's super physical, an enforcer type on both ends. I know his high school coach said he is a true center, and he knows that. He's not one of those guys who, I'm a center, but since I'm only 6'10", I need to know how to stretch the floor and go out and knock down jumpers, which he said he's working on. He's working on jumpers, but he knows his game. He is a physical enforcer type true center, which is unique simply because you've got one on your roster right now in Udoka Azubuike, and he's a rarity. So who knows if these guys are ever going to play together, Azubuike and McCormick, but you could have, by the time it's all said and done, who knows? You got 2 years of Azubuike. We'll see if he's back next year, but after that, at least a season of McCormick. It's quite a change of pace, not necessarily for KU, but just for college basketball in general, because we just don't see many of those guys anymore.
Well, and talk about just having some chiseled big men down low next year. Like you said, we don't know what's going to happen with Udoka, but let's say he comes back. Let's say you have Billy Preston back. That's already a really talented front line, and both those guys are big. They're physical. Then you add in this kid. Then don't forget about Silvio D'Souza, the other 2018 guy they had, and he's kind of similar. He's more of a power forward, but a guy who's athletic, a guy who's chiseled, and a guy who likes to play with strength. So all of a sudden you add that in. I mean, not only are we talking about this team, and that doesn't even include the transfers from Memphis, the Lawson twins. So all of a sudden, not only are you talking about an unbelievably deep front line, but you're talking about one that's physical, that's tough, that's got size. And this is exactly what Bill Self liked to do before these last couple years. It seems like he's starting to get back to what kind of got him started at KU.
Yeah, you mentioned Silvio D'Souza, another top 30 player, another big man in next year's class. So now you've got two guys who have committed to you for next year. But KU also gets the Lawson brothers and Charlie Moore. So basically you've got five guys already committed for next year, three of them already practicing with the team and have been practicing with the team. So depending on how you want to look at recruiting classes, it is mid-September and you've got five guys locked in for next year. And I would assume you're going to go after two or three more still. I know Zion Williamson, perhaps the number one player in the class, is visiting KU this week. I mean, the kid is a jumping viral video, because he has thrown down some of the most ferocious dunks that I have ever seen from a high school basketball player. And maybe a rebuttal to that is, okay, well, college basketball is a lot more than just dunking the ball constantly. My answer to that would be, who cares, because it's awesome. It's go watch those. Have you seen those videos? They are awesome, man. I want that guy in a Kansas uniform. I don't care if he averages 4 points a game. If he gives me one or two of those, you know, every week, I'll be fine with it because it's awesome. Okay? Sports is about winning, sure, but it's also about having a lot of fun. Zion Williamson is fun to watch. I hope they get this game.
Well, he's not just going to be ranked number one or number two in the class, depending where you look, based on his dunking. So he's obviously a really good player. Matt Tate actually wrote an article today on the LJ World talking about how Zion is actually good friends with this kid they just get, David McCormack. So, and David has said that if there's any player in the class that you'd love to play with, who would it be? Zion Williamson. And now you look at it, and going into this article, both David McCormack and Zion Williamson are going to be at this late night at the Fog event coming this weekend. And so now you already have McCormack who's committed. So now the entire time they're going to be together. They're friends. They're going to be on this recruiting visit together. And the entire time McCormack gets to be in Williamson's ear going, hey, this would be awesome. We can go here. We can do this. We can be here together.
You think that matters that much?
I think it does.
Because you know that he's got friends on every major blue blood school that's recruiting him.
Of course he does, but it's kind of a situation where, well, you're not falling behind if the other schools do it, right?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I just don't think I agree, it's almost like something you have to do at this point. Like, you have to do it because every other school is doing it. you don't know how many friends he's got. These guys know each other through the AAU circuit. How close of friends are they really? Who knows? Like, at the end of the day, he's going to choose the school that he's most comfortable with. You hope that those sorts of relationships can kind of help in that process, but you just never know. I'm Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. So on the surface, like of what we know now, it looks like KU's going to be as deep in the front court as they've been in quite some time, because at the very least, you're going to have David McCormick, a true center. Dedrick Lawson and Mitch Lightfoot are both pretty true power forwards. Same with Silvio D'Souza. And then you've got KJ Lawson, who's kind of probably a hybrid between a wing and a power forward. So that's five guys right there. I think, and now people will differ with me, the godfather of Kansas basketball information is Gary Bedore of the Kansas City Star. And I know he was kind of talking about this on Twitter yesterday, that he thinks that it's pretty likely or probable that Azubuike and Preston would both declare for the draft after this season, which from a talent standpoint, it wouldn't shock you at all. But if I were a betting man, I would say at least one of them is back. Because you have to ask the question, are they both going to be lottery picks after this season? Are they both going to be first projected first-round picks? And I would say just from a production standpoint, it's going to be tough. You know that KU is going to be led by that backcourt with Devontae Graham and Malik Newman and Svi, Gerald Vick. I just don't think both of them would be able to put up the numbers that's going to have NBA scouts clamoring for them to go. Because I just don't think... If the question is, are they both going to be projected first-round picks after this year, I think the answer is no.
Right. I think if you're just talking in terms of production, though, big men especially are very able to go around the lack of production in terms of points, I think more so than any other position when you look at the draft, because you see that raw talent. Like, you see all the time, there's one or two guys who were former high school All-Americans, and they come in as freshmen, and they don't really play on, like, a Final Four squad. They're the backup big. They're the first big off the bench. They average, like, 5-4, but then they end up getting drafted in the first round. So I don't think that necessarily completely destroys their chances, the fact that they're not going to be 1, 2, 3, or 4 options on offense. Maybe Azubuike will. But I do agree with you. You're not seeing any of them on draft boards in the first round right now, so I don't know. Because it'd be one thing if Azubuike was predicted a lottery pick right now, and then he goes out there and averages whatever, 10-8, knowing that you have all those other players around him. But it's another thing to expect him, because to rise up into the lottery from being a guy who right now isn't on any draft boards, that's when you have to start getting that production, and they just won't have time for that.
Yeah, probably not. I think that, yeah, it's likely one of them is gone after this year. Azubuike would be a guy that would go to the combine, and teams, it could go either way, right? Teams could go, okay, physically, you are an absolute monster, but you are really raw, and we need to see more of you. Or they could say, all right, I'm licking my chops to get my hands on this kid because I don't want to wait another year, and then all of a sudden he's a top five pick, and we don't have a chance to get him. So let's just say, hypothetically, in my scenario that I'm conjuring up here, you get those five guys you know will be there. McCormick, Lawson brothers, Lightfoot, and D'Souza. And then you get one of Azubuike or Preston to stay. That's six front court players. Obviously, Graham and Svi are gone. Probably a decent chance that Newman will go too. But you'd still have Charlie Moore, Marcus Garrett, Sam Cunliffe, and LeGerald Vick. I think it's very unlikely LeGerald Vick is not going to be a four-year player for Kansas. So that's 10 guys right there in this scenario. And you'd really only be looking to add three more guys, because you have 13 scholarships available. A lot of times, one of those last scholarships is going to a kid that's probably not going to be a huge integral player on your team, but you never know. So you'd really only be looking for two or three more guys to fill out your roster. Zion Williamson on campus this week, and then Devon Dotson, the point guard, who everybody seems to think Kansas is a huge favorite in landing. That's a extra point guard and an extra wing/forward. That is a really, really good roster on paper. And I know that we're looking far ahead, but you know what? When a kid of the class of 2018 commits, that's what it forces you to do. You're not going to get him this year, but it does kind of force you to look down the road and think about what's next. And there are other schools, there are other programs around the country. I know people complain about, okay, well, let's just look at this team for next year. Trust me, we will. We'll do a lot of it. There are programs around the country that don't have the luxury of being able to look a year down the road or 2 years down the road and say, not only are we going to be good this year, but the future is looking pretty bright down the road. at Kansas, you virtually get to do that every single season. I think that what they are in store for this coming year, the year after, is a lot to be excited about, just simply because things are happening more quickly than they have in the past couple of years. KU has really been a program that's got a lot of guys late, which is perfectly fine. There's more than one way to bake a cake, to steal a line from our good friend B. Haney, but this is another way to do it, too. Get out there early. You've got Silvio D'Souza. You've got David McCormick now, who's committed to KU over the weekend. And you've got three guys who are already on that team practicing, and who knows what they're going to look like a year from now. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Up next, let's hear a conversation. David Lawrence and myself sitting down with the head coach, Bill Self.